Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Protecting the country's borders, land, air, and sea from the illegal entry of people, weapons, drugs, and contraband is vital to homeland security as well as economic prosperity. One of today's greatest challenges is protecting the country against terrorists and instruments of terror, while at the same time fostering the country's economic security through lawful trade and travel. The U.S. Customs and Border Protection Agency, CBP, one of the Department of Homeland Security's largest and most complex components, operates at the nexus of national security and American economic security. What are CBP's key strategic priorities? How is CBP pursuing innovative security strategies? And what is CBP doing to be more efficient and effective in meeting its mission? We'll explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Kevin McAleenan, Acting Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations, within the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Kevin, welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thanks, Michael. Good to be here.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Andy Maynor. Andy, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, Kevin, could you provide us with some context around the mission and history of the U.S. Customs and Border Protection? When was it started, and how has its mission evolved to date?
U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP as we call it, was created as a unified border security agency of the United States as part of the U.S. government overall response to 9/11. It was really born officially in the Homeland Security Act of 2002, and it became operational on March 1st of 2003 with the stand-up of the Department of Homeland Security. It's the largest of the seven main operating components of the Department of Homeland Security, along with the U.S. Coast Guard, Secret Service, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or Homeland Security Investigations. And the central idea was that we could address our systemic weaknesses that 9/11 attacks had laid bare in a more effective manner if we integrated disparate components that were focused on border security in multiple departments of government into one agency under one Department of Homeland Security umbrella. In terms of how the Office of Field Operations is structured and its role in CBP, we're the key component that has responsibility of overseeing the ports of entry of the United States, where legal trade and travel it comes into the country. And the field operations is often called a merger within a merger within a merger. CBP already represented the largest merger of people and functions in DHS and really in the government since the Department of Defense was combined. And OFO is where the three inspectional components responsible at the ports of entry of the United States came together. The U.S. Customs Inspectors from the former Customs Service, the U.S. Immigration Inspectors from the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and the Border Inspectors from the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. That's where we all became one unified border force, if you will. And our mission at the ports of entry, CBP is charged with securing and facilitating the flow of travelers and goods into the United States. This is 350 million people a year, $2.25 trillion worth of trade. And we have the unique authority and responsibility of determining whether people and goods are admissible, whether they're physically allowed in the country, whether they're safe, compliant, properly documented. And that's a tremendous and broad responsibility. And within that responsibility, we have several core mission sets. Our priority mission, as we were conceived, remains preventing terrorists and terrorist weapons from entering the country. But we also maintain significant missions in preventing contraband from entering the United States, preventing inadmissible persons, agriculture, pests, and animal diseases, products that are unsafe or violate intellectual property laws or other trade laws, and not to mention our revenue collection role. So it's a pretty dynamic and broad mission set and one that is never a dull moment.
Well, with such a critical mission, how many folks actually make it happen And what's the size of your budget?
We're the largest component within CBP, and CBP is the largest component within the Department of Homeland Security. So overall, CBP is about 60,000 strong with over 40,000 uniformed law enforcement personnel. Not well known, but we're actually the largest law enforcement agency in the world. And so for field operations, the component at the ports of entry that I oversee, we have over 28,000 employees, a budget over $3.5 billion, and we work at 400 locations, 330 ports of entry in the United States, and about 70 locations in 40 countries globally. So it's a very, very broad footprint that we exercise.
And in your role, Kevin, running that Office of Field Operations, which you called OFO, what do you specifically, what's your daily tempo, and how do you execute your personal missions?
The Acting Assistant Commissioner of Field Operations is responsible for several kind of key roles. I have an operational oversight role that's not like a DOD model where there's an organized train and equip role for the service commander. It's an actual operational line and chain of command over what goes on in the field. I also have a key programmatic role, driving and developing our national programs, our risk assessment efforts, our trusted trader and trusted traveler programs, and our international operations. And then the third is really trying to support the commissioner and the deputy commissioner with our enterprise-wide decision-making and our strategy for the overall border management. So those are the things I'm engaged in day-to-day.
Kevin, with such an expansive portfolio and a critical mission, I'd like to delve into some of your top management challenges. Could you give us a sense of what they are and how you've sought to address them?
Sure. I think there's a number of key operational challenges that we're addressing very aggressively. The changing nature of global terrorism, for instance, or threats from transnational criminal organizations. But at the organizational management level, I think like many federal managers who come on this program, I think my central challenge is how do we keep pace with our growing and expanding mission in an era of reduced resources? Both our security and our facilitation responsibilities are too critical to the country for us to fail. And so the types of questions that my management team and I are constantly asking ourselves is how do we innovate and transform to make sure that our business processes are as efficient and as effective as possible and really create a culture where we're improving daily and relentlessly? How do we integrate and apply technology to increase the mobility and effectiveness of our frontline workforce? And how do we motivate and engage our personnel to maximize their job satisfaction and productivity and really try to make CBP field operations a law enforcement employer of choice in the federal government? We're seeing record levels of trade and travel in all our environments, land, air, and sea. Since the bottom of the recession in 2009, for instance, we've seen 4% growth year over year in the air environment to new records of travelers coming into the U.S., which is tremendous benefit economically. But at the same time, we've seen a leveling off of our resource and staffing levels, and our people and our equipment are becoming more expensive at the same time. So we're trying to tackle these challenges in a number of ways, capitalizing on technology, but also looking at our business processes and looking at every aspect we could do more efficiently. If I could give an example of how we're attacking this, the port of San Ysidro, the largest port of entry in the world, where we have 35,000 vehicles, 25,000 people crossing each day, is currently undergoing the largest construction project at a port of entry in history. The total project will change the way the port operates from 24 lanes to over 60. It'll create new pedestrian facilities, new secondary facilities. But we can't kind of shut down and move operations while that construction is happening. So we looked at this and realized we're going to have a significant challenge in keeping that critical trade between San Diego and Tijuana and really going deep into the United States going during this construction. And we looked at how we could move people and things efficiently during this period. And we took a look at the toll booth model. For those who have used their Easy Pass in the federal National Capital Region here, you see that there are lanes where people have their Easy Pass, and they started out maybe one or two lanes at each toll booth as people were getting used to it. And you'd still have most customers paying cash and taking longer in those lines. Well, gradually they increase the number of E-ZPass lanes to really incentivize and force more of the traffic to go ahead and take the step of ordering your E-ZPass so you could get through the process more quickly. Well, we took a similar approach. We have a trusted traveler program that we operate on our southern land border called Sentry. And what we did is we started out with a few Sentry lanes, and we made a policy statement that we were not going to let the wait times in our Sentry lanes go over 15 minutes. And we're going to keep opening Sentry lanes to keep that wait time that low. Well, that drove participation from under 20% to over 37% of the traffic into the Sentry program. That allows us to clear those cars about two-thirds faster than a general lane and really expedite that traffic. At the same time, we had installed technology that allows us to use RFID, radio frequency identification device technology, to read people's documents as they approach our primary booth. So once they get to primary, we already know who they are. We know if there's a risk, and we're able to process them much more effectively. That's about 35% faster than a general lane. So we announced that we're going to keep the ready lanes at about half the weight of the general lanes. And that drove a lot more people to go get RFID-enabled documents. They didn't have to be a trusted partner. They didn't have to have a perfect background, but they could use an RFID document. So today we have almost 70% of our traffic at San Ysidro is using either a trusted lane or a ready lane. And that's allowed us to continue to operate during this massive construction project, allowed us to give consistency for those frequent border crossers and to make a real difference in how people and vehicles are moving across the border in Southern California. So that's kind of a microcosm of how we're trying to really use technology and look critically at our processes so that we can manage this increasing mission set in a period of really austere resources.
Kevin, I imagine with the broad mission that your office has that you embark on your strategic initiatives, but imagine that your daily inbox gets filled with new kind of fast-moving crises or opportunities. Give us a sense of your daily tempo and what are some of the things that hit you when you arrive at work in the morning?
Well, as I mentioned, with 350 million people hundreds of millions of cargo shipments a year coming across the border, there's never really a dull moment. And we have a saying, our deputy commissioner uses it, that you can't make this stuff up. You will always be confronted with something that we never imagined every week, really, in terms of what happens operationally at the border. The beginning of this week, we had an individual on an international flight come in with 15 birds that were sedated in little wire mesh cages sewn into the lining of his jeans. And, you know, who would think that someone would bring in birds in that manner? But we had an alert officer and a great ag specialist detect it, interdict those birds, which could carry bird diseases or other concerns that we want to prevent from entering the country. So we have that kind of surprise every day. But I think CBP prides itself on our crisis response capabilities and our abilities to look at adapting and evolving threats and respond to them with new programmatic efforts, with new technologies. We also are able to use our existing frameworks in new ways. I think the Japan nuclear disaster of a year and a half ago is a good example of that. When the Fukushima Daiichi plant melted down and had a significant radiation release, there was a lot of concern about products coming from Japan, one of our most critical trading partners, and whether they would be contaminated with radiation or even just the containers themselves or the passengers even. And what we have at CBP is we had a radiation detection apparatus in place that's designed to detect potential radiological materials that aren't compliant with laws or even a nuclear threat. And we were able to use that to give confidence to our federal partners, Department of Transportation, Environmental Protection Agency, that we could detect very low levels of contamination and work with them to resolve any concerns to keep that critical trade flowing into the U.S. And I think that's a good example of how we can respond to an emerging issue by using the systems and approaches we have in place in unique ways.
So, Kevin, given your experience, what makes an effective leader? What are some of the characteristics of an effective leader?
I think I mentioned some of the leaders that have influenced me. I think former Commissioner Bonner probably captures the strategic vision and the will and the skill and force of will to implement it that I try to emulate day to day. When I started working with him back in October of 2001, and he was looking at the threats we're facing and how do we strategically address them in a globally networked world, and he is proposing an idea called what became the Container Security Initiative, and this was to place customs officers in foreign seaports to work with host nation customs authorities, risk assess cargo that was going to be destined for the United States, but try to address that risk in concert with those authorities before it was ever laden on a vessel. A very big idea. And he called me into his office later in the evening, as he often did, to sort of talk through the concept. And I remember on the first hearing, I thought it was impossible. I thought that the sovereignty issues, the costs, the demands for reciprocity that we were likely to face, because not all of the ports are located in places where we have good day-to-day law enforcement collaboration. So it seemed like a very difficult concept to implement. And I remember him sort of furrowing his brow and let me say my piece and offer what I thought were the obstacles to this vision. And he just looked at me and said, "We're going to do it." And within a year, we had agreements with the 20 largest seaports in the world, and we're now in 58 seaports in 32 countries. And it's a core element of how the U.S. government maintains supply chain security in concert with our partners. So that ability to recognize that the perceived limits of an organization and the perceived boundaries that exist are really things that can be overcome with a strategic vision and the focus and drive to prioritize and implement it is really one of the leadership lessons I've tried to carry forward and try to emulate in what I do today.
What are CBP's strategic priorities? We will ask Kevin McAleenan, Acting Assistant Commissioner, Office of Field Operations with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.